20. Timothy's Choice. Victoria Police versus the Truth. A Secret Trial. 2016 to 2017. It's the 22nd of November, 2016. Dowsley is slouched outside a courtroom in an upstairs corridor of Melbourne's Supreme Court. QCs file past, each one shutting the courtroom door behind them with a click. No one is supposed to know that this case is taking place, bar the participants, who are sworn to secrecy. Their notes will be kept in a safe and later destroyed. The court trial is not publicly listed. Even court staff are unaware of it. Secrecy is so tight that the judge, Timothy Ginnane, will even entertain arguments about the security clearance of courtroom cleaners. A few months back, Dowsley trailed Justice Ginnane through the courts in an attempt to confirm the existence of this case. Dowsley's investigation has propelled the hearing. Yet he isn't allowed in. There are no bouncers on the door, but there may as well be. The civil case will come to be known as AB and EF versus CD. This jumble of initials means nothing to anyone without knowledge of the case's cast. It's highly unusual. Victoria Police, AB, usually work with the DPP, CD, to prosecute crimes. But the police are taking the DPP to court. Victoria Police and Gobbo, EF, have skirmished for years. Now they're actually on the same team. The DPP, John Champion, is seeking to fulfil his mandated duty to inform seven criminals that their convictions may have been tainted. Victoria Police and Gobbo, both armed with millions of taxpayer dollars, are seeking to stop him. Whatever happens, this case will likely cost Victorians more than a massive Tats Lotto win. But if Victoria Police win, Victorians won't ever find out. Solicitor Justin Quill, a regular advocate for the Herald Sun in court, is inside the courtroom, on the behalf of Dowsley and the Herald Sun, seeking to gain entry for the journalist. He counts five QCs inside, and many more lawyers milling. Quill is a media lawyer who applies a dapper touch and quick wits. He fights suppression orders that prevent public insights into suspects, sentences, and courtroom dramas. He scraps and charms, beholden to judges who generally abhor unexpected delays. Speeches about the freedom of the press and the public's right to know tend to glaze eyes. Here, in an archaic enclave of wigs and cracked leather benches, one of those moments beckons, yet it's anything but dull. Quill tells Justice Ginnane that Dowsley is sitting outside, eager to come in. Quill invites Ginnane to look in the whites of the eyes of the journalist and make clear the importance of the undertaking, to keep proceedings secret. To read Dowsley, at this moment idly scrolling his phone for stories about the Western Bulldogs, the Riot Act, if need be. Quill strikes at the police resistance to scrutiny over Gobbo, which now dates back more than a decade. He figures that the public, as the lawyer's paymasters, at some point ought to know what's occurring in this courtroom. Victoria Police's barrister, Peter Hanks QC, counters with reasons why Dowsley should be kept out. Hanks knows the Herald Sun has risked judicial censure by publishing carefully worded stories that skirt the growing pile of court-imposed suppression orders. There is such an avid pursuit of this story, and that's the business of newspapers, of course, that any undertakings that are given would have to be so watertight that they might run to reams of paper, Hanks says. The pursuit of journalism, regrettably, has to be constrained. This is an extreme case, Hanks emphasizes. The life of a person is at stake. Quill is irked by the odd procedures. He was ejected from the courtroom while Hanks was speaking. He could not dispute Hanks's arguments because he could not hear them. Secrecy, it seems, trumps fairness. The Herald Sun loses this particular legal battle. Dowsley and Quill leave the Supreme Court like footballers dragged unwillingly from the field. Transparency has been the first casualty of the Gobbo legal war. It will be another 2 years before the public gets an inkling of this case. Editor Damon Johnston is compelled in the meantime to publish nonsensical stories about A, B, C, D and E, F, in which the Herald Sun cannot say who or what A, B, C, D and E, F are. Johnston tries to tell readers what they need to know, even though the readers aren't allowed to know what the newspaper is trying to tell them. The truth will be teased out in ponderous detail throughout 2016 and 2017, in the kind of courtroom marathon that lands lawyers' beach houses. The trial will delve into the why and the diabolical depths of the how. But the public is not allowed to know anything about this battle over the public interest. Whispers say that more than 600 letters of disclosure ought to be sent to Gobbo's former clients as a result of her activities. When Champion asked Victoria Police for the names of the people charged with offences after Gobbo informed on them, he received a reply from the Victorian Government Solicitor's Office. He was told the information he wanted was not relevant to resolving the issues before the court. It seemed very relevant to Champion. The police want the court to bury the whole issue. They argue, and Ghanaian accepts, that disclosures of Gobbo's informing will have a chilling effect on all Victorian police informers, paralysing the force's ability to solve serious crime. It will also lead to her almost certain death. The competing public interest is the contamination of the justice system, and the fact of seven, and perhaps hundreds more, potentially unsafe convictions. It all has to be laid out. Gobbo's recorded conversations with her handlers, her incriminating of her clients, and her critiques of police briefs against them. The price for Gobbo was high. Anxiety, hypervigilance, depression. She got stressed when she spoke to the crooks, and she got stressed when she dealt with Victoria Police. The crux of her issue is her unwillingness to receive police protection. It's fundamental to the police's argument. If she accepts police protection, the police will have to rely on other arguments to mount their case. But because Gobbo will not accept protection, police argue, she will probably be killed if her informer status is revealed. Days of evidence delve into her resistance. Gobbo has hinted she may finally go into hiding after all. She appears to be yielding to the realities of her jeopardy, and police contact her physician about signing forms. In hindsight, Gobbo was probably teasing. She was never close to entering police protection. Such a choice, according to evidence given by her treating psychologist, would almost be as dangerous as exposure. Gobbo has had a long and checkered history of seeking psychological help. Her handlers first urged her to visit a psychiatrist just months after she turned informer. By late 2006, Sandy White was so concerned about her dependency issues and welfare, he suggested she see a psychologist. Though she'd declined the previous invitation, this time she reluctantly agreed. It didn't go well. Gobbo queried the woman's credibility and understanding. An information report stated that Gobbo attempted to bully her. By 2010, though, Gobbo was seeing a psychologist she trusted. The professional sessions with this woman would continue for some time past 2017. Casual observers have plonked various diagnoses on Gobbo over a long period, including borderline, histrionic, and narcissistic personality disorders. Her more extreme choices show symptoms of all. Her long-term psychologist says most in her profession would not take Gobbo on as a client, yet she has not diagnosed any personality disorders. Gobbo's treatment includes cognitive behavioural therapy, which involves being goal-directed and purposeful. She takes an antidepressant, Lexapro, and anti-seizure medication. She has been encouraged to meditate and use other relaxation methods. Yet no techniques can alleviate the strain of always looking over her shoulder. Gobbo wants unique conditions that disqualify her from the protections offered by police, such as a personal bodyguard detail. Her grandiose demands conjure visions of a luxury villa nestled behind high walls, with the terrace where she accepts pina coladas from the butler as the kids splash in the pool. She refuses to give up her name. She doubts she can blend in. As her psychologist says, "I think that she feels that she can't alter her physical presence. I think she feels that it's unlikely that she could just disappear in that sense." The psychologist testifies that Gobbo will become suicidal if taken from the support of friends and family. It's unclear who these people are, but the possibilities are limited given Gobbo has told so few loved ones about her informing. "I very much feel that if she was to be taken out of this environment she's in now and put into some kind of isolatory protection program without support of myself and name redacted, she would eventually think there was nothing really worth living for," the psychologist says. "Going into hiding would trigger a catastrophic mental health breakdown. Well, I suspect she'd end up in a psychiatric hospital and potentially with major depressive disorder if it becomes treatment resistant, which just means that she's not responsive to the antidepressants that she's on. If she's not able to function, then you start looking at much more serious kinds of treatments, so electroconvulsive therapy." Gobbo is taking so much medication that any new doctor introduced to her dosage would be shocked, or so says her own doctor. Access to Gobbo's medical records is argued over at length, ironically for reasons of privilege and privacy. But when the DPP's legal team are finally granted quick access to examine them, they discover evidence that could potentially turn the case. They find the letter Gobbo wrote to Assistant Commissioner Stephen Fontana in 2015 that included her top 10 stings, in essence, spelling out her informer history, what she did and how. It's a dog-ate-my-homework moment. Victoria Police have not produced the letter for the trial, a bad habit that has frustrated every inquiry into the force's use of Gobbo. But there are bigger moments to come. By September 2016, before the trial begins, Ghanaian has determined that Gobbo herself can enter the witness box. Gobbo is holed up at the Novotel in St Kilda. Dowsley has just written a highly incriminating article about Rob Karam and Pasquale Muscles Barbaro, both of whom she is informed against. Gobbo now thinks she's being followed. She's summoned to a meeting at the hotel by senior police officer Cindy Millen. When Millen contacts her, Gobbo braces for bad news. "Do I need to bring a lawyer?" she asks. "Am I being arrested?" "It's urgent," Gobbo is told in response. "I can't tell you anything. You need to come to this meeting." Gobbo arrives to be confronted by police and lawyers. She is handed a 3-page document, an originating motion describing the court hearing at which she will give evidence. She is surprised by the list of the 7 criminal clients who might have been affected by her informing. She'd thought there would be more names. Gobbo now has a choice: admit wrongdoing or fight. She decides to fight. She will tell her story to a public audience of none. Not even those she betrayed can know of the events in this courtroom. The force has earlier argued that Gobbo should not be made aware of the case at all. Now they argue on legal grounds that she shouldn't testify, again prompting questions about their motivations. "It wasn't about her," a well-placed source says now. "It was about them. They were worried about their own exposure." But now Gobbo wants to give evidence. She wants to rationalise choices that have debased the cornerstones of her calling. Her testimony looms as a security challenge. Since the first Herald Sun article, she has masqueraded Sun's police entourage as just another suburban mum. Yet Hanks now argues that she should give evidence remotely. The court's protective officers will not be enough. Hanks wants a special arrangement. He wins concessions. Over 5 days from late February 2017, Gobbo gives her evidence in the county court instead of the Supreme Court because it offers better security. The trial transcript runs to thousands of pages, yet Gobbo's emotions on the stand can only be guessed at. She takes medication during breaks in giving evidence. Her kids are being babysat, but they are on her mind. She presents none of the coquettish vulnerability she has applied to other audiences. Her behaviour is equal parts brassiness and naivety. Perhaps she's not as worldly as she thinks she is. There's something else too. Gobbo bristles at being grilled on her behaviours. Narcissist or not, her mental defences tighten under attack. She has few regrets, she tells the court. Her informing was altruistic, prompted by seeing how hardened crooks such as Carl Williams and Tony Mockbell manipulated justice. She did not breach legal professional privilege or confidentiality, she claims, despite the vast quantity of documents and recordings that suggest otherwise. Reading between the lines of the transcript, one imagines Gobbo mentally squirming as she offers the same lame responses to questions about ethics. Plausible deniability does not fly in this forum. Gobbo is telling others what she wants to hear. She does not relinquish her mental bullet points, even when they look flimsy under scrutiny. She appears to be following an internal script, and she's sticking to it, no matter how it conflicts with rules of law or established facts. Dr. Sue McNichol, QC, representing the DPP, guides her gently through the quagmire, as though by the hand. McNichol exposes contradictions and forces corrections and qualifications. She questions Gobbo on her choices as an informer and then on the unfortunate consequences of those choices. Gobbo tends to confuse these two elements. She doesn't accept that her choice to become an informer is why her life is now so troubled. She shirks the responsibility and blames the police. In her own mind, she did good things, only to become a victim of forces beyond her control. It was an unbelievable kind of time in my life, because there were people that I saw one day who were literally murdered by the next day, she says. The unanswered question is this. Why didn't Gobbo walk away? The simple answer is that she didn't want to, nor did Victoria Police want her to. Yet the Caped Crusader routine will not fly in court, mostly because a close examination of her informing reveals the absence of both a cape and a crusade. Recordings are played of her chats to her handlers, and in them, Gobbo sounds as though she is relishing their attention. But she is shocked to hear a recording of her first meeting with the SDU in 2005. She was told at the time that it was not to be recorded. It puts a new light on things when you know you've been lied to from the very beginning, she tells the court. McNichol probes Gobbo's ironclad belief that her identity as an informer could be protected. This projected belief, it should be added, does not tally with her behaviour and paranoia at the time of her informing. She read police briefs for oversights that identified her, and probably broke into a colleague's office in search of incriminating evidence against herself, which she denies. She didn't trust the police to protect her at all. In the witness box, Gobbo explains that there are two types of informers. She was not a criminal and did not need a get-out-of-jail card. Her premise wobbles when one recalls that she offered herself to police as an informer in 2005 because she feared she was perverting justice and committing crimes. There was never going to be an occasion where your secrecy and your identity was blown? McNichol asks. Gobbo seems to think that conventions of both gossip and criminal law disclosure do not apply to her. Perhaps it reflects her living outside the rules thinking. She sadly, regrettably, trusted and believed what I was being told by police. Yet she also admits, under repeated questioning, that she was aware informer secrecy could not be guaranteed. Gobbo knew that an informer codenamed E292, who infiltrated a major drug operation headed by John Higgs, was put at risk after his files were stolen from the drug squad officers in January 1996. She herself, in 2002, correctly identified a hidden informer as Terry Hodson. She had successfully argued in court that the identity of an informer could be revealed on behalf of Tony Mockbell in 2005, even as she began snitching on him. Gobbo reiterates her belief that criminals would need an official piece of paper to act against her betrayals. Again, her fears at the time do not align with this statement. She tells the court about conversations over a number of years where this topic arose, and I was repeatedly assured that if a subpoena was issued, for example, or some kind of proceeding in which material was called for that may identify me, that the police would fight it on my behalf and claim public interest immunity. Yet her contempt has since grown. She says Victoria Police gave her assurances about unprecedented circumstances should she need to be placed in protection. She took these to mean special privileges not usually reserved for those in hiding. These were to be put in writing, but they never eventuated. There were threats to remove her children from her for their safety in 2015, which Gobbo interpreted as a nasty incentive for her to accept police protection. She instead took personal precautions at her own expense, which she does not detail to the court. She has told few people about her informing, besides several health professionals and the barrister representing her in her successful 2010 claim against police. Her informer role was confidential until Anthony Dowsley put it on the front page of the paper. Should her name be released through the court, it would put a bullet in my head. McNichol offers a kind of denouement. In closing, she calls Gobbo's use simply abhorrent. Hearing the simplest facts of this case causes one's jaw to simply drop. This case is more than a stain. The criminal justice system has been contaminated. McNichol queries the arguments Victoria Police and Gobbo have used for so many years. EF, Gobbo, should not be able to dictate the outcome by refusing to go into WITSEC, witness security. She has asserted that Victoria Police cannot be trusted, but the point is that her personal choices are not relevant. Brind Zichy-Wojnarski is the amicus curiae, counsel known as a friend of the court, whose role is to advance courtroom arguments for those affected by Gobbo's informing while not officially representing them. He points out that the court has heard a lot of evidence about Gobbo's safety. This consideration needs to be balanced by the administration of justice and the question of whether Gobbo and police have interfered with that. He raises scenarios that have gone unmentioned by Victoria Police's and Gobbo's barristers. He argues that if the possible misconduct of the police and Gobbo is not revealed to those who may have been denied justice, it will restrict the court's ability to investigate the legality of using a barrister as an informer, and the question of whether criminal charges need to be laid. The weighing process will require Your Honour to determine whether, and we'll say you'll find there has been, just how serious a corruption of the criminal process system there has been, not only by Gobbo, but knowingly by Victoria Police. Victoria Police accept that they have erred within the cocoon of a closed courtroom. They concede that some of their officers have obtained information in an improper manner, Hanks acknowledges perceptions that Gobbo's informing is a fundamental breach of the criminal trial process. Perhaps it's said that the police have learned its lesson, he admits. Victoria Police ask Justice Ginnane to put their misdeeds aside, and never mind the hapless goons betrayed by the grand deception. Yes, internal police reviews have listed possible miscarriages of justice. As a result, nothing at all should be done, the police argue, in arguments straight out of TV's Yes Minister. For years, Victoria Police ran the risks of Gobbo and repeatedly chose to avoid the consequences. The organisation seems to be saying, yes, we created the inequity, but trying to repair it would only cause more damage. And no, we have not disciplined any officers for their behaviour. But our supervisory systems are better now, and check out all our new acronyms. The absurd line belies the gravity of the ruling Ginnane will need to make. He faces a choice that would haunt any person of conscience. He is known for his serious-minded approach to the law, as well as his involvement in preventing Dowsley's beloved Western Bulldogs from folding in 1989. This case is in a different league. The law seems to have cast off its bearings of right and wrong. Murderers and drug traffickers have become the victims. Their guilt or otherwise does not matter here. What matters is that they may not have received a fair trial, as all are entitled to. If Ginnane is not thrust into the role of God, he at least carries the burden of Abraham. His conundrum is complicated by many months of evidence from doctors and police officers. He has to decide which of two competing public interests outweighs the other. Does the sanctity of life come before the administration of justice? This can be reduced to an even more basic question. Will Ginnane protect Gobbo's life or not? Justice Timothy Ginnane doesn't call it the pub test, but he may as well. He poses the questions that ordinary, reasonable observers have asked since the Lawyer X scandal erupted. Weren't the criminals that Gobbo informed on guilty anyway? And why offer them a chance at being freed when the consequence may be the murder of EF, Gobbo, and harm to her children? Ginnane concludes that the police evidence about the lethal danger to Gobbo is compelling. Gobbo acted to get the mockbell monkey off my back. So why should Ginnane put it back on? A reasonable person with knowledge of these facts might well wonder what end of justice is achieved or advanced by making the proposed disclosures. Ginnane writes in his judgment, delivered on the 19th of June, 2017. He then answers himself, everyone is entitled to independent legal advice, everyone, as they are to a fair trial, an enshrined requirement that should not be confused, in some of these cases, with the notion that an innocent man was convicted. Ginnane's judgment sets out the extraordinary lies that Gobbo perpetrated. It lurches into questions of criminal behaviour by Gobbo and police. Ginnane walks through the cases of each of the men, now known as the Secret Seven. One of them, Tony Mockbell, is serving a long sentence in jail. Three others, Milad Mockbell, Frank Ahek, and Carl Koda, are now free men. Steve Svetanovsky was granted bail in 2020. Two others, who cannot be named, received shortened sentences for rolling on their drug-dealing colleagues. Tony Mockbell would certainly benefit from learning of Gobbo's informing role. The knowledge would provide him with substantial assistance in challenging his convictions, at least those in 2006, on the basis that he did not receive a fair trial because he did not have independent counsel. Gobbo's betrayal of one particular client forms the essence of the Ginnane judgment. He was the springboard for the subsequent convictions of Milad Mockbell and four other members of the Secret Seven. All five men were entitled to know how this man's evidence against them was elicited, directly or otherwise, through Gobbo's actions. Had they known this during their trials, those trials almost certainly would have been aborted. Ginnane finds that the man's case demonstrates the complexity of the issue. He assumed that Gobbo was representing his best interests. He, too, could argue that Gobbo's dual role led to a miscarriage of justice, despite his pleading guilty. Victoria Police and Gobbo have argued that the information in the proposed DPP letters to the seven criminals will not tell those men anything of value. It's a bold gambit, given the findings of internal police reviews and the subsequent talk of court appeals and enormous compensation payouts. Ginnane finds it highly likely that legal professional privilege was breached. His desire to satisfy the paradoxical demands of the law is detailed in the fourth last point of his 60-page finding. I do not pretend that this conclusion answers the question that I have suggested a reasonable person might ask, he writes, but I consider the public interests in our nation's rule of law and system of criminal justice requires this outcome. Telling the world about Gobbo, even at the cost of her life, is the only choice. Victoria Police have lost, again. What do? They say no, again. The force appeals Ginnane's decision to the Victorian Court of Appeal. On the 21st of November 2017, the three judges unanimously uphold Ginnane's decision. So Victoria Police seek leave to appeal to the High Court.